Thank you for downloading the latest episode of the DDT Archives Indie Lounge. I am everyone's best friend, Greg, and this week on the podcast, we are celebrating Russian Week. We will honor some of the great Russian characters to ever grace the squared circle. We kick things off today with a guest joining us all the way from, no, not Russia, but Japan. We were excited to be joined by New York native Masha Slamovich as we talked about life in Japan, her old school mentality when it comes to her wrestling, and so much more. She is one of the top young female talents on the scene, and as a fellow New Yorker, we were thrilled to chat with her. We have more great content coming your way the rest of this week. On Wednesday, it's our old school flagship show, and continuing with the theme of the week, we will talk about some of the great Russian heels of wrestling lore. On Friday, we have another great interview with Dmitry Alexandrov, so be on the lookout for that. As always, you can follow the podcast at DDT Archives on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can follow Chris on Twitter at Chris_DDTHSLB. And please remember to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, especially on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating. Write us a nice review. We'd love to hear from you. Stay tuned at the end of the show to see how you can get your hands on the brand new DDT Archives t-shirt. We are very excited to announce that, but without further ado, here is the incredible Masha Slamovich.
Welcome to the DDT Archives. This is Chris. With me, as always, is my tag team partner in podcasting, Greg. Greg, what's going on, man?
Oh, you know, enjoying my coffee. That's all.
Shocking. With us today on the Indie Lounge is a really special guest joining us all the way from Japan, Masha Slamovich. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. We just finished having some delightful dinner here, and now I'm here with you guys.
Well, clearly we know which part was better.
The meal.
I knew you would follow up on that, Greg. Yes, definitely the meal. So I want to start this off. While doing some research on you, there was an anecdotal that popped out at me. You needed a fake ID for your first match because of the New York Sports Commission.
That is correct.
That's crazy. How old were you when you started training, and what led you to needing the fake ID?
So I was 16 when I started training at the World of Unpredictable Wrestling under Johnny Rods. And I needed a fake ID because I was literally just needing to do one match because there were Japanese scouts there that ended up, I ended up going over to Japan with them for my first tour, and they just needed to see one match of mine, and I was not 18 years old yet, so I couldn't wrestle on the show. So Johnny's like, just get a fake ID and just wrestle once, and you're turning 18 in like a couple of months and you'll be out of here. You know, hopefully over there, which I was by then.
What state was the fake ID from?
God, I think it was Connecticut.
Nice.
Because, yeah, I ended up losing that one, you know, since I turned 21, what, like last year or something? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ended up losing that one and getting another one to, like, use for actual life purposes. That was from Brazil, which was later on.
We've all been there. That's awesome.
Greg has fun stories about fake IDs and getting pulled over by police officers.
That's not, it's, we don't have enough time for that story. It's too good.
What was training like under Johnny Rods? Obviously, he is somebody that is absolutely famous in the Northeast. And as New York guys, we've heard a lot about him.
Training at the World of Unpredictable Wrestling, you know, was probably the best place that I could have possibly started out at, because there was such a focus on the little details, you know, on the footwork, the crispness of everything, especially just being able to chain and chain on the fly, which I now going more and more places, realized that it's kind of a lost art. And Johnny Rods and everyone who he had coaching there made sure to, beat it into me one way or another, because they would make sure that first we knew what it felt like, the hold, whatever it may be put on for real, so that we were able to sell it properly. And then, first you learn it in a shoot and then you learn it in a work. And that was probably one of the greatest blessings that I had gotten from there.
That's awesome. I never thought about how that would actually work. And talk to us about how that makes that selling become real.
It doesn't make it become real. It is real, because how can you sell something that you don't know what it feels like? You have to understand, where the pain is coming from. You have to feel it. And that way you're able to recreate it without actually having to feel it every other time. And, it's like, I can put you in a wrist lock, and if you start selling your ankle, what the hell are you doing? you have to understand the joint manipulation, the body manipulation, to be able to later on use that in your wrestling and every match.
You consider Dynamite Kid as one of your role models, correct?
Absolutely.
So he's absolutely one of my favorite wrestlers growing up, and I've grown to love him even more now as an adult, and I can understand his work. What about him appealed to you?
It was probably, he was such an innovator of his time. It's like when I was growing up, I would watch, WWE, SmackDown, Raw. It was what everybody was watching. But whenever I was able to go on the internet and look, I always wanted to look at older wrestling. I don't particularly know why. I guess it seemed more real and aggressive. And Dynamite Kid was all of that. He was fast. He was high flying. He was hard hitting. And just, he was a small guy. He was jacked as all hell. And that was probably something that caught my eye, because, being 5'3" and growing up in Jamaica, New York, I kind of had a Napoleon complex myself, going out there and, getting into fist fights when I was a kid. So I was, I saw Dynamite Kid and I saw somebody that I could relate to, I suppose, in the good and the bad ways.
So how much do you hear about him over in Japan now?
When I speak to the men, he is spoken of a lot more. When I speak to the women, they're just like, oh yeah, we know that guy, but it's not so much. The women watch women's wrestling, I guess, and they're like, why are you always watching men's wrestling? I've always watched men's wrestling more than women's wrestling. I don't know.
So it definitely, while I was doing my research for this interview with you, definitely your timeline on Twitter is you have a very old soul when it comes to your the wrestling you seem to tweet out, the clips and stuff. So what else is it about, because we're an old school podcast, like we told you, what is it about that the older stuff that draws you in and makes it, I guess, more interesting to you?
I would probably have to say, again, it's the realism. It's all the holds are applied, and you can see that it's not just being loosely held. The hold is put on, and the person is clearly selling it and working to get out of it. Sometimes I don't watch today's product too much, but when I do, sometimes I'll just see something that is sloppily applied. And I guess it's the things that I nitpick being from Johnny Rods, because it was just honed into me so much that when I see anybody else do it, I'm like, oh, it just bothers me to the soul. I'm like, everything has to be crisp. And whenever it's not believable, if you wouldn't do it in a real fight, don't do it in the ring. And back in the 80s and 90s and 70s and whatnot, if it wasn't believable, it would not be done. And if it was done, then they would just stomp you in the face for it.
Yeah, like that's one of the watching wrestling for like 30 years. It's one of the lost arts now is like working a body part, right? Like nobody does that anymore to like set up whatever you're trying to like when you're weakening your opponent's strengths. Yeah, it's great that you notice that.
Absolutely. That's one thing that I always think about. I'm like working a body part is just such a key thing for me that whenever it's just non-targeted offense, it makes it harder to sell if you're being beat up all over the place. Then it's like, how are you gonna run the ropes? How are you going to stand or do anything? You know, if it's like you're selling the leg, you can't run. If you're selling the arm, you can't punch with that arm. But if it's like you're selling the arm and the leg and your head, you might as well be hospitalized at this point.
I want to thank you for now giving me the answer to every argument with those people on wrestling Twitter. I'm just going to simply say, why would I run at you and flip over ropes if we were really fighting? So thank you for that. I don't know how I never thought of it, but that was incredible. And now I win every argument. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Greg, write that down so we don't forget.
Okay. I don't have a pen.
I do, but it sounded better to tell you.
But it's a great thing to hear as like two old farts like we are to like hear somebody as young as you are, at you know, really have that grasp of the psychology. It's impressive.
Thank you. I always take great pride in psychology, and that's something that I focus a lot on, and that's something I'm currently focused on is studying Japanese psychology for every single type of match and trying to understand it so that I can, you know, combine that with certain things that I do over in the States and kind of mush the styles together.
How long have you been over there?
Oh, let's see. almost 4 months.
Oh, geez. And was it like planned to be this long, or did like the whole pandemic thing keep you there longer than expected?
It was originally planned for me to be here until like April 1st or March 31st or something like that. But halfway through March, they asked me to stay here longer to do a bunch of shows in April. And I accepted, but then coronavirus happened. So I decided to stay here anyways, because I was able to continue training and have a gym, and we still do 2 tapings a month. So I'm probably just going to continue staying here until my visa runs out at the end of July.
Awesome.
At this point.
Oh, that's fantastic. Not the coronavirus thing, but you know, the fact that things have worked out for you during this.
We often hear about the dojos in Japan. What are they actually like?
This dojo is spectacular. When I arrived here, you know, things in this dojo are constantly, constantly, constantly changing all the time. So when I arrived here, you know, it was completely different from how it is now. Between me getting here in January and the, like last month, we put up a brand new ring. We have brand new fitness equipment. We have brand new Olympic weight sets, you know, and the dojo is literally 5 feet away from the house, legit. So we live right next door to it. We can just go in there anytime we want to lift and train. And in the house, I am fortunate enough to have my own room. And we also have 14 dogs and 1 cat in this dojo.
That's awesome. And Greg's a nightmare.
It's not a nightmare.
Greg, you haven't liked any of my dogs.
It's not dislike. It's
fear?
Yeah, kind of fear. I don't like dogs. I'm not a sorry.
I think you would go absolutely mad here, Greg, because every time that I walk into the kitchen, I'm just stormed by 12 of those dogs. And I have another one that lives in my room, and there's another one that's like in the other room who's like a little insane. So we don't really, I don't have interactions with that dog. He's bit several people here.
it's so funny because like with like my mother-in-law has like 2 dogs, and like my son is all like into it now. And like whatever. Like, there's a big one and a small one. The small one's like his best friend. The big one he's terrified of. And I'm like, I was like, oh no, he's me. Cause he just does the same, like, turn away from the animal move. You know that? Like, the half twist, like, horrible thing. Yeah, that's what he does. I'm just like, oh no, I passed this on to him.
Yeah, my mother's the same way, but I love these dogs. I don't know. It's amazing.
I have my English bulldog. His middle name is Dynamite, so I stuck with it. My wife named him, and I gave him a middle name. So
Greg is,
well, I mean, that's coming eventually, but that was too history based for Robin. She does not like the fact that I'm a history teacher.
Funnily enough, that was my favorite subject in high school.
Mine too. It's how I make a living. Awesome.
Makes sense with your taste in wrestling clips.
Yeah, yeah. That does make sense, actually. Yeah,
there you go. It all works out.
I have to note.
Go ahead.
You asked about dojo life. I cannot speak highly enough about this food that we have. It's called chanko. I don't know if you've heard of it before, but it is a common dojo food that is pretty much in all wrestling and sumo dojos. It's basically like a stew of like pork and like potatoes and carrots and whatnot. And it's just kind of like tossed together with rice. And man, it is the greatest thing ever. I have to find out how this stuff is made so that I can cook it back home, because man, I wish everybody could like live in a dojo and experience A, dojo life, and B, chonko.
So that's good that you said that, because I this leads me to one of my questions. You're a fellow New Yorker, like the two of us. What's the first thing you're going to get when you come home?
Bacon, egg, and cheese.
On a bagel or a roll?
on a roll.
On a roll? Okay.
That's a good choice.
That's an excellent choice.
I couldn't go away from pizza.
Usually I meal prep. And I'm pretty strict about diet, but you know what? I can afford one damn bacon, egg, and cheese in 6 months, all right?
Yeah, it's like my only vice, too. It's just like, when I lived down south for a couple of years, I lived in North Carolina, I lived in Boston. Every time I was home, the first place I went to was to get a bagel. First thing, because nobody else can make bagels anywhere.
You know, it's like, bagels are just not even a thing here in Japan.
No.
Like, you don't, like, I don't think I've seen one bagel this whole time I've been here.
That's my retirement plan right there. I just open a bagel shop in Japan and just live life off the riches.
You would be so over. They would be like, what is this?
I gotta give that idea to the wife. That'll sure go over well.
Yeah, I'm sure she'd be thrilled to move with you to Japan. Oh yeah, I can imagine that conversation now, and it ain't gonna end well. And I'm gonna be looking for a new podcasting.
You know partner. What you know what she would say? She was like, "Yeah, go ahead." She's like, "I'll be here. Go ahead." She's looking at an opportunity to get rid of me.
Pack a bag, don't come back.
Yeah.
So before you went back over to Japan, you did some dark matches with NXT. What experience like?
I actually did not do dark matches with NXT. I got there after being picked for the opportunity from an Evolve tryout. And unfortunately, the day that I was there, they did not need an extra. So they planted all of us the people that were there in the crowd. And we got to watch the show front row.
My bad. I misread that then. I knew about the Evolve tryout. I thought it led to a dark match. I'm an idiot.
No, the internet lying? That's unheard of.
You know, it was a great networking opportunity anyways, because it was my first time down there. So I would have not have been there if it hadn't been for the tryout. So all's well that ends well.
What are your ultimate goals in wrestling?
My goals, you know, are to wrestle for as long as humanly, physically possible around the world, you know, and to leave a legacy, because I want to be remembered when I am dead. I want right now, I guess my vision maybe is, if you can put it that way, is to continue working in Japan, because that is something that I've wanted for my whole life. So I want to continue coming back here and establishing myself here, you know, and of course, when I go home in the States, do the same thing. And, you know, looking at my two wrestling heroes, Dynamite Kid and Chris Benoit, if I can have a career that goes like that, that would be my ultimate goal, because they did it all. And I also would like to do it all and just be remembered in a better fashion, I suppose.
I thought Greg was going to jump on the Chris Benoit reference. It's hard to say that now, but we're huge fans of Benoit.
You know, a lot of people's stories end terribly. It doesn't mean there aren't good chapters. And I think it's important that you remember the good things too when it comes from the bad. And like Benoit was one of top three for me favorite wrestlers of all time. And I'll hang on to that. It doesn't matter to me. And I'm okay saying that. I'm a grown up. I can defend my stances with that.
I agree with you 110%, because, you know, as terrible as a thing that happened with him obviously was, that goes without saying, you know, people, they look at it and they're like, he's a cold-blooded murderer. He had roid rage. Just look into it and, you know, look at some of the facts. Don't just look at what was put out in the media in, like, what, 2007, when everybody was just getting on to the proverbial hype of the situation. Everything that happened can be tied back to chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And if people were more aware of that, then potentially they would be less judgmental of this terrible thing that happened, or at least more understanding of it.
Yeah. There's also a mental trauma there with, like, this best friend died, and, like, combine that with anything else that was physically wrong with him. It's just a recipe for disaster. So, like the man was sick. Let's not think like he, like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting emotional. Sorry. Like, I don't want to get angry.
The CTE stuff is just scary. As I told you before, I coach football. I've been doing it for almost 20 years at this point. And I was lucky enough to be able to travel around the country and teach about concussion management and awareness and things like that to youth and high school coaches. And just doing that has helped me kind of understand that it's a legitimate disease. Two, they need to be able to test for it at some point. And three, it changes who you are. So you're absolutely right. To when you look at it without the media hoopla, then it comes down to the man's brain had literally deteriorated to the point where he didn't know up from down. So I almost wish that it could be a learning lesson for more people. I think it's kind of, they're missing the boat in that way, that they could actually use this as a way to kind of help the next generation of performers to not end up in a similar situation.
100%. 100%. The best possible way that this could go at this point would be that this would bring more attention to CTE and would make people more aware of it, because myself, I didn't even know about it until a couple of years ago when I was already well into wrestling. And, you know, this was after competing in so many sports that, you know, horseback riding, rugby, all that, concussions, when you fall, hit your head, concussions, wrestling, concussions. And, you know, you mix that, like you said, he was in a great deal of physical pain between having neck fusion and whatever else was potentially wrong with him. You mix in painkillers, you mix in alcohol with an already any amount of CTE damages your brain, but with the extent that he had, and then you mix all of the other things, and you mix depression, you know, after losing people like Owen Hart and Eddie Guerrero, you mix all that together, that's, it is almost unbearable to think about the last couple of days of his life from his perspective, because I don't think a lot of people consider that. But can you just consider being in that man's shoes at the very end of his life? And I believe that the things that he did to his wife and his son, he did them while he was in a state of delusion, or whatever you want to call it. But imagine coming to and then realizing what you've done and having to, at least for some hours or days, have to live with those decisions, and knowing the way that he loved this business, having to think about what that would do to his name, what that would do to the business, because I'm sure those thoughts cross his mind. I get emotional just thinking about his last moments, because it, you know, just think about that. That's bewildering.
It's sad. You know, it's, I couldn't imagine what would have been going through his mind. You know, it had to be absolutely traumatic. And obviously someone that worked so hard on his legacy, knowing that it would be completely, I don't think he could have imagined that it would have been completely erased like it has been, but just tarnished to the point where people could never say anything about his wrestling without mentioning the other side of it. That had to be devastating to him.
Absolutely. And like I said, just thinking about it from that way just puts more of an emotional spin on it.
Greg, you okay over there, buddy? We don't see your picture, so I wanted to make sure you're not welling up.
I'm not that emotional about it. I think it's important for people in our position, Chris and I, and yourself too, Masha, that like it's important to keep the positive memories alive with him, because it's only gonna help people learn about the mental illness and the injury history and why we need to protect ourselves. But it's also because, you know, there's a lot of great stuff there. And some of those matches got me through some hard times. So it's important to kind of keep those memories alive. And I was also looking up Chonko recipes. I can totally do this. You know, it's great. Like, just side,
I'm telling you.
Because here's a little sidebar here. Just to like kind of lighten up the mood a little bit. My wife is 4 or 5 months pregnant right now, and all she's wanted is ramen, and I made it for her over the weekend. And then, but this is like ramen on steroids, so I want to like try and pull this off for her.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys are both gonna blow your minds with it.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm a restaurant guy, so I have some skill in the kitchen, so I can totally do this. This is like not even close to the hardest thing I've ever done.
Way to toot your own horn there, buddy.
Hey, look, I have very little confidence in like 98% of the things I do in my life. Cooking is the 2% that I know I'm awesome at, okay? Stop. Stop it.
What else can you...
I don't know, but it sounds like you're the best cook on here, because it ain't me, so you get that one.
Chris can hold his own.
Yeah, Chris can hold his own. You don't get this physique by not being able to cook.
Yeah.
What else should our audience know about you? Because watching your matches, you're a fantastic performer, and we want to definitely get your name out there to our fans, because, like I said, you're awesome. What should everybody know about you?
Well, I don't know. aside from what I do in the ring and who I am as Masha Slamovic, that is my life. Wrestling has been my life since the day I stepped foot in a ring when I was 16. And before then, I was obsessed with it, you know, and I don't really know what else there is to me aside from wrestling and being obsessed with wrestling and training 24/7. And it's funny that we're talking about Chris Benoit, because I am currently reading Ring of Hell, and I found out a super cool fact, and that is that me and Chris Benoit debuted on the same day, November 22nd, 29 years apart.
That's cosmic.
That's awesome.
I think that's a fun fact. You said what to know about me. There's a fun fact.
I like it. When you get back stateside, definitely let us know, because obviously you work in our neck of the woods, so we want to make sure we get out and support you, you know, in person. So whether that be August, September, next year, whenever you're back, let us know, because we definitely will be there.
100%, I will let you know. And I look forward to seeing you guys in person. And if you make some of that chonko, please bring me some.
You got it. That's a deal.
Absolutely. Why don't you plug your social media? Because like Greg said, it's a great follow.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Masha Slamovich. And I also have a new t-shirt that has just been released on Pro Wrestling Tees. You can find me at prowrestlingtees.com/Masha Slamovich. Now's a perfect time to go check out my new merchandise.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been absolutely a great episode, and we're really excited to talk to you. Thank you for taking your time all the way from Japan to meet with us.
Thank you for having me. This has been such a lovely conversation.
Thank you.
So you can follow us at DDT Archives on both Twitter and Instagram. And you can follow me on Twitter at Chris_DDTHSLB. And thank you again for listening. And we look forward to continuing to bring you the best interviews from around the world.
Once again, a huge thank you to Masha for hanging out in the Indie Lounge with us. You can check out her brand new t-shirt, now available at prowrestlingtees.com. And speaking of t-shirts, we have a big announcement. And it is that the official DDT Archives logo shirt is now available. We posted some pictures of it on our social media last week. If you are interested in purchasing one, please DM Chris at Chris_DDTHSLB. But also, the best way to support the show is by subscribing and rating the show on iTunes. Give us a review, take a screenshot, send it to us. We would love to hear from you. We are working tirelessly to bring you the best content of old school and indie wrestling reviews on the scene. We will see you next time on our flagship show this Wednesday, where we talk about the great Russian heels of wrestling history. Until then, take care, friends.